I highlighted Yasmani Grandal in Los Angeles. He seems to have a knack at this point for having a stretch of performance that just completely drags down his overall line. Because his final line this year was not indicative of how good he was when he was healthy. Before August 10th, he was hitting 289, 391, 498 with 15 home runs. That was in 87 games. After August 10th, he hit 049, 233, 085 with one home run. And that's in 28 games. There, based on where he's going, there's a ton of upside here.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 73 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Ginella and George Bissell. We're going back weekly again, guys. How do you feel about that?
I'm pretty excited. It means that baseball is close, even though it's January 11th as we're recording this. It means baseball's closer than you think.
Very excited. It's going to be fun. It's like 25 degrees here where I live, so anything that makes it feel like baseball season is a good thing.
That is very true. So we have started our positional series at Baseball Prospectus this week, and we, as we have for the past couple of years, are starting off behind the plate, and that's going to be the theme of our episode today, talking all about catchers, and this is going to get released during our big catcher extravaganza on Tuesday, I believe, which it was True Bro that came up with the name, right, for Catchella.
Catchella, yes. Yeah. I'd like Catchapalooza, but you know, it's fine.
Yeah. But yeah, we have a lot to dive into. So let's go right in. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. George is at George Bissell's. It's two S's and two L's. Email us, flagsflyforever at baseballprospectus.com. Rate, review us on iTunes and Stitcher, etc. We will take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We are as we've done the past 2 years. We are going to quickly talk about 2015 values first before we move into the tiers for 2016, we're obviously using Mike's valuations that he's written extensively about over the course of this off season so far. Should we now decide if we're going to do the American League first or National League first throughout this? Do we want to? I'd say we could alternate, but we're never going to remember which one we did last time.
Why don't we do the American League first? Just in this case, we can end on a happier note.
Yeah, American League catcher really just blows. Yeah, so I think that's fair. Let's start with the American League. So your highest earning player from 2015, or at least who had a share of it, is no longer going to be a catcher, which leaves the old tribe at the top with Russell Martin and Brian McCann coming in at $17 and $16 a piece. Mike, what's your overall sense of what this tells you about catching in the American League? based on these valuations from last year?
Well, I think there's a couple things going on, and one of them is, yes, you're correct, and J.P. Breen pointed this out today overall in his State of the Position piece, but catching just is bad. There were six catchers who earned $10 or more in AL only. That's down quite a bit from, I think there were 12 in 2014, and there were a few more than that in 2015. And what I think there's a couple things happening. I think one is that, yes, you did have some injuries or down years from players like Yan Gomes and Matt Wieters. But what we're seeing is we're seeing teams, and we're seeing this more in the National League in terms of how it's affecting the offensive performance. We're seeing teams emphasize, you know, framing and defensive metrics much more than we've seen in the past. So you're seeing a guy like Robinson Chirinos or you're seeing someone like Chris Iannetta getting playing time despite the fact that their offensive numbers are nothing to write home about. And I think, you know, in the case of Iannetta, a few years ago, his offensive performance, even with his on-base percentage, would have been so bad that I think teams would have looked to replace him or get rid of him entirely. But he got a pretty good chunk of performance, and you know, he's projected as of right now to be the Mariners starter. So I think what you're seeing at the position, I don't think this is going to change. You're not going to see a big time offensive performer. And the second thing that jumps out, you know, the last guy to earn 20 or more at the position in the American League was Carlos Santana in 2013. And based on some of these profiles, based on low batting average, based on the fact that nobody runs, I really doubt you're going to see another $20+ performer, or maybe somebody will skim it. But I really doubt you're going to see that again for some time.
George, what about you? What when you look at the valuations in the American League from last year, what one thing jumps out at you as being surprising?
I feel a great sadness wash over me. That's what stands out the most. I think Yan Gomes is surprising in the sense that he only earned $7 and his season kind of went off the rails early on. He got hurt in early April, missed nearly a month and a half, and really was terrible when he came back. He hit well in September. I think he hit .264, three home runs the final month. He's a guy who hit 21 home runs the year before. So I think there are some signs that he's finally started to feel healthy towards the end of the year, and that he's going to be another step closer to being back to the guy he was in 2014 with some more time off in the offseason. That I like him as sort of a bounce-back guy.
So, yeah, I don't know how much more we want to dwell on the American League here, since a lot of the more interesting stuff is the National League. But my favorite thing about these valuations goes back to Chris Iannetta, is that Chris Iannetta was so bad last year and so not valuable compared to other American League catchers, yet he was still more valuable than the guy he's replacing in Seattle, and that's how bad Mike Zunino is.
Well, and the guy behind Zunino is Alex Avila, is also projected to get a starting job.
Yep, this is the world we live in.
Yeah.
So let's switch over to the National League. I don't think we really need to dwell on Buster Posey much. He earned $27. He has been a pretty consistent earner when healthy. Mike, maybe you can speak a little bit to his kind of stability in this position.
Well, he could arguably be the best NL only catcher from a consistency standpoint. You know, well, definitely in either league since Joe Mauer, but in NL only, he's probably the best catcher from a consistency standpoint since Mike Piazza. Like he's not quite that good, obviously, but he's been really good. It, just a $25 plus earner. He's averaged, I think, a little bit over 608 plate appearances a year over the last 3 or 4 years. You know, when he had that horrible injury, you know, at the plate, he's just a guy I don't like paying for position scarcity, but he's just a guy I don't mind paying an extra buck or two for, just to make sure that you're hitting the landing on a guy who is going to produce.
Yeah. So outside of Posey, George, I'll throw it to you. What's one of your takeaways from last year in the National League here?
Well, the obvious one, I mean, Posey earned $27. The next best catcher in the NL was Nick Hundley, who earned $15. So I think when you look at some of the guys who earned, who weren't Posey, who earned near the top of the class, a lot of them had a little bit of speed. Hundley stole 5 bases. Derek Norris, who earned 13, stole 4. And JT Realmuto, who finished at $12, stole 8, which was actually more than any other catcher. So I think having that little bit of speed was a nice boost for those guys. And all of them added double-digit home runs as well. So it's weird looking at some of their 2016 ADPs so far, in that those are guys who aren't being coveted by anyone right now. So I think that's one interesting aspect of it, where a lot of the guys who finished near the top of the valuations aren't being drafted very high this year at all.
Yeah. I you know, I see sort of some of the names and how little they earn. I mean, we know there were down years for Jonathan Lucroy and Yadier Molina and even Miguel Montero to an extent. And they all, you know, they all earned $10, which is certainly not insignificant. They were all certainly losses. Lucroy by a lot. Lucroy went for an average of 20 in the expert leagues. But that range of catcher seemed to really struggle this year, and it even extends down to Wilson Ramos and Willem Rosario and Ismani Grandal, Travis d'Arnaud. It's a whole clump of draft losers, whereas the top tier outperformed by a lot. These were guys that went for very small pittances at the draft. Hundley went for $5 in average in the experts. Francisco Cervelli went for 4. AJ Pruszynski went for 2. Realmuto wasn't drafted at all. He was taken for a buck in labor, it looks like. And then Wellington Castillo went for $2. So, it'd be interesting to see whether the tides turn this year and the guys who were that mid-range behind Posey become better investments. But they certainly were not in 2015.
Did we mention Devin Mesoraco, who basically missed the entire year and lost $19?
Yeah, I had him in tout last year. I'd rather not talk about him if we can avoid it.
Well, you won anyway, yeah. Though. So.
I did, but it still sucked.
Well, you could take solace in the fact that you paid less in tout for him than you would have had to in CVS and labor.
Yeah, and I got to reclaim my fab, too.
It's true. So let's move forward now. 2016. How are you guys handling this position? Before we get into the actual names here, is there just such a glut in this position, both between the American League and the National League, that if you don't get Buster Posey at a reasonable value, you're just kind of waiting until the end and seeing who's left?
I think it. Are you talking about a one catcher or a two catcher league? Because I think that obviously depends.
Okay. Yeah, I'm talking one for now. We can.
If you're in a one catcher league, I think that's the right play. I think you should wait. And you know, also we might as well address the elephant in the room here early. In a one catcher redraft, I'm not pushing Kyle Schwarber to where I'm seeing him in some of the early ADP. You know, he's going about a round after Posey, and I respect Schwarber. He has 30-plus home run potential. But just based on the batting average and based on some of the downside there, I don't want to take him in the third round. I'd rather wait and, you know, just go with some of that depth in a one-catcher format and hope that I get somebody, you know, who I like. And particularly because there's so much variability, I'd say, between 10 and 20, I can get somebody I like who I might have ranked a little bit lower. And, you know, maybe he's my 12th or 13th best guy and somebody doesn't even have him on his board.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. I wrote up the early ADP analysis column for catchers that's up at Baseball Prospectus right now, and that's really the first thing. You have to talk about it. You can't ignore it. The Schwarber conversation. Right now, he's going on average with the 32nd pick in NFBC leagues. Those are 15-team leagues, but if it were a standard 12-team, that's about the third round. So that's really high. And the problem I have with it is something that you sort of touched on, but in order for him to return that type of value, he basically has to hit like 30 home runs. He has to not only be one of the best catchers, but one of the best power hitters in the game right now. So you're taking on just a huge amount of risk that early in a draft, and I'm just hesitant to do that. As good as Kyle Schwarber is, and I think we're very progressive in how we view him as a site and with our rankings and our discussions about him, but the price tag is getting a little bit absurd at this point, I think. It's still early, but it's way too high for me.
Yeah, and there are also some question marks here defensively that are going to hurt him a little bit in the short term. We don't know how much the Cubs are going to use him at catcher. We don't know how comfortable the Cubs are going to be using him in the outfield. I mean, it seems like the Cubs will make room for him in the lineup somewhere, but they might not. They have a lot of depth, and that defense has the potential to be a real issue. They have a full outfield if they want it without him. They have a starting catcher without him if they want it. They have clearly a first baseman that's not going anywhere, but that leaves him a little bit less of a margin for error than that you would expect someone taking that high.
He should be DHing. Is what it comes down to.
He does not look pretty in left field.
It's just no. It stinks they don't have a DH, but. Yeah, what are you gonna do?
I think he can get better in left field, but he just might not be there now.
Yeah,
I mean they kind of threw him out there and without any without a whole lot of reps. I mean they didn't really play him much in the outfield during the minor league season.
No, they decided with him. Well, it's funny because they worked really hard on his catching, and you know we heard from our colleagues at BP Wrigleyville that he was he had improved and all that, but the decision to promote him was that they needed his bat in the lineup, and they caught him enough that he has eligibility, but they weren't going to rightfully so supplant Miguel Montero, so they put him in left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean Montero could get hurt again, which sure. wouldn't be the most unpredictable thing in the world, but you can't quite rely on that,
right?
So. Mike, you put out the tiered rankings for 2016, which are going to be out when this podcast comes out. Do you want to kind of walk listeners through the tiering concept and how that works before we get into the names?
Sure. Since hopefully we have some new listeners this year, and if you're new, welcome aboard, and if you're returning, glad to have you back. Just to go through what we do every year at Baseball Prospectus, we have tiered rankings at each position, and it's a star system, and someone puts together the rankings. I put together the catchers for this week, and we go through to the staff and kind of the person who puts the ranks together is the final say, but it's sent out to the staff at Baseball Prospectus, and we kind of have a reality check. And once we go through that, the players are ranked. The 5-star is the elite player or players at the position. The 4-star is the next level down. The 3-star are kind of the guys who in mixed leagues are maybe in that $15 to $20 auction range. The 2-star are kind of back end on a standard mixed or a little higher in a deeper mixed. And the 1-star in a standard mix are your fringe guys or guys you're going to pick up on reserve or maybe later on as a free agent. And guys in a deeper format that you're looking to get, maybe for like high single digits in an auction.
Yeah. So with Buster Posey, he's a 5-star in our rankings. Was there a valid case to leave the five star tier blank entirely?
Yes, just because Buster Posey, if you take out the position scarcity, and if you just look at the stats, he's not a big time home run guy. He'll certainly hit them. You know, he's never going to steal bases, as George talked about. It's not a position that you have a lot of steals. So, yes, the argument could be made that Posey is a high four star, that he's not quite elite. But, you know, the decision was made. A couple people chimed in, and I was right on the border, so I was willing to move him up. Posey's been so good, and he's been so consistent for so long. You know, and also he's a batting average guy, and it's a category that tends to get underrated. He does so much across the board. And this is especially true in mixed leagues where catchers get bumped up, and it's the one position I believe in paying for scarcity, that I think he deserves a five-star recognition.
Also, part of the issue is it's tough to put Posey in the four-star tier because then it puts him right next to Kyle Schwarber, and I don't think any of us feel that comfortable putting Schwarber that close. I don't think the gap is that close between the two. I think there's still a pretty substantial divide between those two value wise.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I'm curious to get both of your thoughts as to where the right place to take Buster Posey is, assuming it's a one catcher league. So assume it's a 15 team one catcher league. Where, off the top of your head, Mike, where are you comfortable taking him?
I'm okay with him in the third round. I think the second, that I've seen him going in the second in some of these early drafts. And, you know, if I go look right now at the NFBC, I think his average, and George, maybe you have this up. He's going in the second right now on average.
Yeah, I have it in front of me. He's going with the 20th pick on average. So yeah, that's the second
round. I
think
that's a little early for me. And that's... it's really aggressive, and to the points I made before, I understand why you do it. I'm more comfortable with him in the 30s, maybe even the high 30s, which means I won't get him. But yeah, he's a third-round pick for me. How about you, George?
Yeah, I think so as well. I think the biggest detractor against taking him that high is you look at some of the names who are still going behind him. You know, it's guys like Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Abreu, Starling Marte, Jose Bautista, Chris Sale. It's hard to take him over those types of guys. I get it with position scarcity, but I think I'd be more comfortable with him towards the third round. When you look at, let's sort of pick 30 and back, I think that's, you're right, that's where I'd feel more comfortable with him. But you can understand why you'd be tempted to do it in the second.
Yeah, I think I might be a tinge higher on him than you guys. I think I could see him settling in that 25 to 30 range, although I don't think that would, going off the early ADP, I don't think that would get me him. But let's change the question a little bit. We might be faced with this decision in a month or so. Take a two catcher 15 team league like mixed labor. How far up do you bump Buster Posey given the dregs that are beyond the top 15 or 17 catchers?
I think I move him up a little bit, but, and this is where, you know, we're just splitting hairs. He's still a late second round to me. He's still somebody I have between, like, say, 27 to 30. I still, when you look at the 20th pick overall, and this is where I agree with George, this is nothing against Buster Posey. I have the utmost respect for it. This has more to do with the value you can get with that number 20 pick or a little bit lower. I think you're leaving a lot of stats on the table if you take Posey and you go with position scarcity. I think it's too much of a reach. I think for Posey to do what he has to do with the 20, he's going to have to hit like 25 home runs, or, you know, he's going to have to do so much more with the bat to make him worth a 20. I'm just not down with that.
Fair enough. So Schwarber, we talked a little bit about before, who's the only catcher in our four-star ranks. So I don't know whether you guys have anything additional to add about Schwarber that we didn't cover, or if not, we can move down to the slightly bulkier three-star tier.
Well, can I just have a quick question about Schwarber, because you do these often, Brett. So for 2016, I want to do an over under here. Do you think he will hit over or under 265? And I'll start with you, Brett.
Under.
George?
Under.
And just to me, that's the answer. I think for him to get to five-star and be elite and to be where, to be taken where he's getting drafted, he's going to have to do that to be worth that third-round pick. And I agree with you guys. I don't think he's going to do it. I think the average will come up a little bit this year. I just don't see him quite getting there where he's going to justify the ADP selection where I'm seeing him right now.
I completely agree. And I am one of the world's foremost Kyle Schwarber advocates. I love him long term. I just am I'm not willing to pay that price in 2016.
The only thing higher than his ADP right now is the Powerball jackpot.
It's true. Both of them keep going up.
Topical.
Very topical.
That's what we're all about on Flag Spot Forever.
So the three starts here. We have a bunch of guys who, for the most part, disappointed a little bit in 2015, but for various reasons. Is there, I guess, how, Mike, we'll start with this question. How close was the highest member of this three-star tier to being in the four-star tier and approximating what you think Kyle Schwarber's value is?
It was probably McCann or Brian McCann. I should clarify, because there's James McCann, who, if you're not paying attention at all, you the only way you know he doesn't belong here. But Brian McCann's a guy who, we were talking about this before you hopped on our call, Brett, before the show. He had the NL to AL fatigue in 2014, and he had a nice bounce back last year in terms of the power, but the average was still low. But Brian McCann's a guy I could see, and he's similar to Schwarber. If he got the batting average up to 260, if he even kept the same home runs, the same runs batted in, I could see Brian McCann putting up a four-star performance. Everyone else here, Russell Martin's probably the player who's a close second. But of everyone else here, McCann's a guy who I could just see, based on the numbers he had last year, based on what he could do on that lineup, he was the guy I would have considered for the four-star of all these players.
So, George, the one guy in this tier who I think is going to have a lot of swing in his value is Jonathan Lucroy. He was the pretty clear-cut number two catcher heading into 2015 and just had a really rough season overall, both offensively and defensively. Is 2016 a new dawn for Jonathan Lucroy, or is this decline something to really be concerned about?
Well, I mean, the age is a little bit of an issue, and Mike and I talked about this a little bit before we went on the air, but the aging curves for catchers are a little different than a lot of other positions. Lucroy is going to be 29, so he'll turn 30 this upcoming season, so the wear and tear is a little bit of a concern as a catcher moves into their 30s, but I think we're going to see a little bit of a bounce back here, and I think the early ADP that is reflective of that. He's going on average in the ninth round right now, so he's just outside the top 100 picks. And you look at this tier as a whole, pretty much, and look at some of the ADPs, and it's interesting that catchers are going a lot later this year than they did a year ago. There's only two catchers going inside the top 100, Posey and Schwarber. A year ago, there were five catchers who went in the top 100, and then seven in the top 115. So I think catchers as a whole are going a little bit later. But Lucroy is a guy I think definitely can bounce back this year. I wouldn't be too concerned about it. You like where he's hitting in that lineup. They added a couple of nice pieces there from a power standpoint. He's going to be followed by Ryan Braun, Chris Carter, Domingo Santana, and Chris Davis. So It's an interesting lineup, and I kind of want to see how it plays out, but there's a little bit of excitement there, definitely.
Yeah, it's all power and strikeouts over there in Milwaukee these days. Mike, you have Travis d'Arnaud as your value pick here for this tier. How confident are you that he can play in 100 games this year?
100, I'm fairly confident. I think where I would get wary, if you ask me 120, that might be where I'd be a little hesitant about him. And that's the issue with d'Arnaud. The issue is, can he stay on the field for, you know, enough games to be a starter? But, you know, I point this out in the article. You know, if you look at d'Arnaud, if you look at Kyle Schwarber and what they did last year, their numbers across the board, with the exception of runs, were actually fairly comparable. And I'm not suggesting d'Arnaud is Schwarber, that he has a ceiling, but he's going, you know, 120 slots later in NFBC drafts. So I think there's value here. There's obviously risk, to your point. You know, he could play only like 70 or 80 games. But where he's going, I'm completely comfortable rolling the dice and hoping you get those 100, 110 games out of him, and, you know, hoping you get close to 20 home runs.
Yeah, the best value in this tier by far, by ADP, is d'Arnaud, who's going in the 13th round right now, outside the top 150 picks. So, absolutely. Every other guy in this tier, I think, is going closer to the top 100 than they are to 150.
Yeah, to your point, Brett, of the guys in this tier, I would say d'Arnaud has the most risk by far. But, you know, it's the other thing about the position. Every catcher, based on the demands of the position, based on the injury risk, you know, everybody has some risk, I think, to begin with.
Yeah, and the fact that there are very few actually good catchers sort of lifts the replacement level a little bit on the position, just because there's, as we'll get into with the 1 and 2 star tiers, there are guys who won't be drafted at all in 12 team and even 15 team one catcher formats that are reliable enough to pick up off the waiver wire if you do lose a month of someone like Travis d'Arnaud.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the 2 star tier is led off with a guy who we talked about earning a lot in 2015. And, you know, the question still remains whether this was a 1 year Coors Field fluke or what. But Nick Hundley is heading this group here for us. Mike, I know you, I think, are a little higher on Hundley compared to some of the other people at BP and certainly elsewhere as well. But what are your expectations for Hundley in 2016?
I did like him more than a number of people at, you know, on our staff. Although I know he was a pick today, so I know I'm not alone.
This is my pick.
Yeah, he was your pick, George. I think Hundley will stay on the field. I think he'll probably, you know, get about amount of plate appearances he got last year, if not a few more. I think some of the concern is that Tom Murphy is banging on the door. And, you know, honestly, I know, George, I'm preaching to the choir here with you. Coors is Coors. And I don't want to – I'm loathe to make this comparison because we're talking about a much better player. But we saw some of this with Charlie Blackmon last year, where he was really underrated by some. People said he's not a very good player. It's not sustainable. And the argument I make is that, you know, the player, if he's not a great player, he's going to play half his games at Coors Field. And it makes a difference. And that's why, for me, of all the catchers in this tier, I think I still have Hundley at the top of the tier. And in a deep league in particular, I might be pretty aggressive with him and still have a price on him pretty close to someone like d'Arnaud in the 3 star.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you said there, Mike. Hundley was a guy we put out a target piece for the catchers, and he was my pick just because his ADP right now is just ridiculously low. And yeah, he's he's a product of, you want to say he's a product of Coors Field, that's fine, especially if you look at the home road splits. There's a legitimate case to be made there. He had a 356 BABIP, which was about 60 points higher than his BABIP for his career. Those are all fair criticisms that you could point to and say, well, maybe there's a little bit of regression to the mean coming with his overall profile. But the reality is he's still hitting in Colorado. He didn't change teams. There's nothing about his situation that's really changed. And right now he's the 15th catcher off the board in terms of ADP right now. So there's a lot to really like with Nick Hundley. I wouldn't be concerned at all with him. He's going outside the top 225 picks right now in ADP, which is ridiculous because he finishes the fourth best catcher in mixed leagues last year. So I think people are hesitant to buy in, and that's going to create a real value buying opportunity for fantasy owners who are comfortable waiting on the position till the late rounds.
So you guys are kind of into him. He hit 301 last year. He's career, he's under 250. With Coors Field in play, what's, if I set the over under on 275 as his batting average, are you going over or under, Mike?
I'm going to go a little bit over. I think that 280 is probably where I'm looking at. So over by a little bit. I see some regression, but I don't think, because of the Coors factor, I don't think it's going to be crazy.
Yeah, he hit 301 last year. So even if you regress him back more towards his career BABIP, he still ends up around 280, like Mike's talking about. So I feel like over is doable. If it's under, it's not going to be by much.
That works. My favorite thing about Nick Hundley is over the last 6 years, he has attempted 23 stolen bases, and he's been successful on 8 of them.
Wow.
That's like the opposite of Carlos Santana, who's successful all the time for some reason.
We'll get to him next week, right?
This is very true.
He's no longer a catcher, unfortunately.
No, and he's no longer third base either, unfortunately. So
he was so much fun in OBP leagues. It's great.
He always is.
He still is.
I know, but less so, not a catcher.
Well, yeah, a catcher with that OBP potential is exciting.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So with the rest of these guys in the two-star tier, we're not going to cover all of them, but George, you had Hundley was your target when you had Mike. You're participating in the avoid, but if you were pegging one of these guys who is not Nick Hundley to target for 2016 based on where they're going, who do you think it would be?
Based on where they're going, and I said this in my article, I like Wilson Ramos. I think that he's a guy that everybody's like, he can never stay healthy. And then last year, for the first time, he stayed healthy. He didn't hit 25 to 30 home runs, which some people were I think, ridiculously extrapolating off his half seasons. But he did hit 15, and, the average, I don't want to, use BABIP to death because, people do that, but the average was just not indicative of what he can do. I think even if Ramos hits like 250 and gets up to 18, 20 home runs, which is feasible given his power potential, I see some value here. And, he's just somebody, he's not old by any means. A lot of the injuries were injuries that were kind of like, broken bones in a flukish way, and they weren't things that were degenerative. He's kind of the guy here that I'm targeting. I know he's not your target, Brett, because you wrote about somebody else in this tier who, I don't know if you want to talk about him now or not.
I am happy to talk about him. I wrote as my target again. I did the same thing last year, but I highlighted Yasmani Grandal in Los Angeles. He seems to have a knack at this point for having a stretch of performance that just completely drags down his overall line, because his final line this year was not indicative of how good he was when he was healthy. I went back and I put this in the piece, which is up at BP, but I broke his season down into both before his shoulder injury popped up and after, at least by all accounts that I could find, based on the first pieces of it being reported. That line of demarcation is August 10th. Before August 10th, he was hitting 289, 391, 498 with 15 home runs. That was in 87 games. After August 10th, he hit 049, 233, 085 with one home run. And that's in 28 games. Now, he clearly has some trouble staying healthy. But you could also say this about just about anybody being drafted around or ahead of him outside of Buster Posey. Based on where he's going, there's a ton of upside here, and that goes doubly in OBP leagues where he is even more valuable. I think he's got as good a shot as anyone in this tier at hitting around 270, 280 with 20 homers. And that would do enough to earn him, close to $20. So that's where I'm focusing for now. I'll be curious to see whether with additional reports of his health improving, that if that ADP goes up. But he had cleanup surgery on his shoulder. He appears to be 100% going into spring training, and it's not his throwing shoulder. So that's always good for staying on the field. But yeah, that's my plea for Grandel. I mean, the other guy who I will always vouch for, who happens to reside in this tier as well, is Derek Norris, who I have long loved Derek Norris. And if I were to pick two people who had the capability of doing that, it would be Norris and Grandel.
Brett,
they're right next to each other in those tiers. It's beautiful. I like to block out everyone else's name. Actually, Wellington Castillo is right after the two of them. So just those three together just draw my eye right there.
Brett, where do you think Grandel and Norris are going in terms of ADP at the position right now?
Nowhere.
14th and 15th.
Yeah,
it's sad. They cost nothing on draft day right now.
This is true.
Yep. Good picks.
Yeah. Anyone else on the two-star tier that either you guys want to jump in on?
I was going to ask you about Norris, so I don't really have a. I guess the one guy I want to ask about is Matt Wieters. Do either one of you think that there's some bounce back here?
No,
I do, but I think it's already baked in with his name value.
Okay.
Yeah,
He shouldn't be going. Wieters is probably going in the top 10 among catchers right now, right?
10th, exactly 10th.
Yeah.
And yep. He shouldn't be because of his past performance and because of his injury, but he was the number one prospect in all of baseball. So that is what happens when you were the number one prospect in all of baseball.
Yeah, and I think, because he got the qualifying offer and, because he's going to be making almost $16 million this year, if he's healthy, he's going to play. And I think some of that is baked into his price as well.
Yeah, it's the fame bump.
I'd be interested in your take, Brett, on JT Realmuto, just because he wasn't that heralded of a prospect coming up, but he's a guy with a little bit of speed, did get nearly 500 plate appearances last year. What do you think his season looks like? Because he's one of the guys whose price is being relatively inflated right now. He's going 11th at the position, ahead of guys like Yan Gomes, Grandal, Norris. Are you high on him at all? Or
No. Okay. 0% chance I'd take him with those other guys on the board. I don't think he's that great of a hitter. The steals are nice. But I don't think there's any. I don't think there's a step forward in the power. I don't think there's a step forward in the steals. I don't think he's all that. I don't think he's likely to become a 290 hitter in time. Plus, he's as you may have read on the site already, he is an abysmal framer. which may hurt his ability to get playing time. Although the Marlins really just do not care about framing at all, since they either currently do or have previously employed pretty much all of the worst framers in baseball. It's quite amusing.
They also employ Barry Bonds at the moment, which is odd.
Barry Bonds, great framer.
He's a hitting coach, but
I think Brett knew that, George.
Oh yeah. Maybe our audience didn't. I don't know.
Yeah, it's possible.
It's a public service here.
So let's go to everyone's favorite portion of the show. We've been doing this. God,
do,
we've been doing
do
this.
We, do we have podcast. To?
Now, this is going to be fun. It's always really terrible with catchers, and then it gets better with the other positions.
Well, it gets better until we get to relievers at the very end, and then it's bad again.
That's true.
So hey, we started Ed on a lousy note.
I like relievers.
Well,
you guys.
So we are. Yeah, so we are going to play pick your guy. We're all going to take one player from the one star tier and stand by them thick and thin. So Mike, George, who wants to go first between the two of you?
I'll let Mike go so he can take Iannetta.
Yeah, I'll take the guy I took in the article, and that's Chris Iannetta. And it's funny because I historically have hated Chris Iannetta as a fantasy player. But some of that was he was riding the Coors coattails for years. And I think he's finally reached a point where he's going to be a bottom of the barrel catcher in two catcher 15 team leagues. He's going to go for like $2 or $3 an ale only. And he's probably going to return value at that price. You know, this is the one star tier. He's not going to be a superstar. He's not going to hit 20 home runs. But if the BABIP bounces up even a little bit and he hits 230 and hits like 12 to 14 home runs, he's going to look better than any catcher in this tier, and he could even squeeze into the bottom of the two-star tier. And that's what you're looking for here. You're not looking for a superstar. You're just looking for a little bit of value. And you know, the other thing is that you know the framing stats are terrific. I think he was like 9th or 10th overall last year in value. So unless his back completely falls off, the Mariners are the polar opposite of the Marlins who we're just talking about. They're all about the framing. It's why Mike Zunino kept playing and playing and playing until they finally couldn't play him. So Iannetta is going to get the at-bats. And the only caution is if you do have a team that has some weak batting average plays, that's where you're going to want to be careful. But I think otherwise he's kind of the guy for me in this very thin tier.
So, George, that leaves you up next.
I mean, the obvious name here is Yadier Molina, but I'm going to go with A.J. Pierzynski just because for some reason he just continues to exist. I can't even explain it. According to PFM, he earned close to $9 in mixed leagues last year, which is astounding to me because it feels like he's been playing longer than I've been alive. So, A.J. Pierzynski, why not? It's Atlanta. He's going to get the playing time. They clearly don't care.
So there's no real need to talk about any of these other guys in the one-star tier, right? We're not that masochistic. No?
I don't think so. You can read all about them at Baseball Prospectus. It will be up. So, and I'll we'll also be writing about – I'll be writing the AL-only articles this year, and Keith Crumley writing the NL only. So if you're really a masochist and want to read about the guys even below this tier, there'll be plenty of copy.
Very, very true. So with that, we will take a break and come right back to finish things up. Welcome back. Thank you for listening to episode 73 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer. You've been listening to myself, Mike Giannella, and George Bissell. Join us at Baseball Prospectus starting this week for the next 2.5 months. We are getting you all ready for your 2016 draft and season. We have our positional series that has kicked off now, which will feature about 20 articles per week just focused on fantasy at that position. And we will have some chats starting up. We will be doing a lot of fun stuff. On top of that, we still have super premium memberships available where you can sign up and join us on the Bat Signal, which is our fantasy answering service. So if you still have questions remaining about catchers that have not been exhausted by all of our coverage on the site, you can ask them to us. If you have not learned enough about Kurt Casale, that's what the Bat Signal is for. So with that, we are out. We will see you next week for First Baseman. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Rest in peace, David Bowie.
Oh, that was nice.
Who's David Bowie?
Oh, Jesus.
Damn millennials.
The guy they made the Zoolander joke about. Actually, what's Zoolander? That came out when you were, what, like 6 or 7?
I was going to say, I only know, like, internet clips from Zoolander.
Yeah.
Oh, God.